we're learning this piece in the Iris Shkayef. Based on the Aleph in the Iris Hetchiyah, with the Rav Avinir's commentary, Rav Kook is helping us here to fill in a little bit what we're missing in the Maim Hadar on the shift that took place, on the change that took place, and why is it that now there's such a great urgency, to learn Emuna, to be mamik, to deepen our understanding of Elokus, and to have a Yiddishkeit that's deep and that's rich. In the past, Jews were simple, for the most part. Again, we're not talking about the Gedolei Yisrael, who were astonishingly great. Much, much, much greater than we can ever imagine for nowadays. A different sugya. But the Hamoin Am subsisted on, for the most part, on a little bit Mishnayos, some Ein Yaakov, some Kapitel Tehillim, the women with the Tzanirena, with a lot of tears. And Rav Kook, as part of... Careful. Sorry. Didn't hurt. As part of his vision of the great awakening of modern times, the return to Eretz Yisrael, the need to establish a mahalach no longer as individuals, little kehilas, little shtetlach, but to develop a greatness as a nation, as a people. To return to that way of Am Yisrael that was before the Churban. Am Yisrael, in Eretz Yisrael. Preparing the way for Kahuna and for Malchus and for Nevuah. It was no longer possible for us to continue, not only in that way of separation, of fragmentation, which of course is not shaykh, but it's no longer possible to continue with an immature understanding of Elokus, with such an immature, simple understanding of Elokus. All of the factors that were taking place at that time, all of the changes that were taking place at that time in Europe, which we were learning about in the Maamar Hador, the changes that were taking place, the sophistication, the modernization, the secularization, all of that, of course, caused everything to accelerate, and really, in certain ways, to spin out of control. But in Pnimius, things have to change. So we were learning a little bit, we began on the pages, I hope you still have the pages from the Eretz Hetchiyah. And last week we were just talking about how, even in terms of the understanding of Chassidus, what was Chassidus? I'm not talking about Chassidus of the Baal Shem Tov. What was Chassidus? Chassidus. What was the impression that the average Jew had of what it meant to be a Chassid in the old days? I'm not talking about the Baal Shem Tov. What it meant to be a righteous, pious Jew? What did that consist of? What was the requirement to be a pious Jew in the old days? So the Ramchal already wrote. The Ramchal was the time at the beginning of the resurgence of the Tchiyah. So the Ramchal already wrote that he was fighting against this misunderstanding that to be a chassid, to be a righteous, pious Jew, meant to be someone who fasts all the time, who rolls in the snow, who lives a life of asceticism and separation and so on. That's the wrong definition. For our time is for Am Yisrael. That was one mistake that persisted on into modern times and that caused many, many Jews to misinterpret what Yiddishkeit is, and to think that Yiddishkeit is something that you can't live with. It's not a healthy, normal way of life. It's the way of life for Yechidei school, for just some great individuals who can live like regular people don't live that way. So many people still to this day think of Yiddishkeit as being something which creates a standard of life that takes you away from this world, takes you away from your family, takes you away from a normal, healthy way of living. In terms of understanding Elokus, look at footnote 1848. What was the way of thinking about God? The way of thinking about a Kodesh Baruch Hu. So Anoshim Rabbim Mitarim La'atzom Eizem Mishuhu Hatsofa Mavid B'chal Ma'aseh Adam. The typical old way of thinking about the Kodesh Baruch Hu was that there's somebody really big up there, really, really big, Hatsofa Mavid B'chal Ma'aseh Adam, who sits up there watching over everybody. And he sees that you were not such a good boy this morning. You didn't get the davening on time, and he marks off a little thing. He gives a look to his elves a little bit. Those are the malachim, and he writes off a little thing that this chamyakel and so on. So the davening was shracha davening, didn't come on time. Roishem hu ba'adishus mochletas. Noilot Adam, Meis Adam. And he has his big books, and he writes down the person's born, a person dies. Ve'einehem aminim, he's bringing this to the Lashon of one of the great thinkers before the Holocaust that was killed in the Milchama Babil Zeitan, Zechon Levacha. Himself is a Merdik at Tzadik. That's how people thought of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, this Lashon of Babil. Ve'einehem aminim, oisem mishuhu, in the eyes of the typical ma'amin, I say mishuhu, this somebody in Shemayim, Moshel Badim, is controls man, b'chaguloi malido, brings him into the world, b'chakalo supports him, miyaso torments him, mimiso, and ultimately kills him. Derish men amaisim yiduim, he demands particular types of behavior and actions from us. He writes in the book all of the things that a person does. That was pretty much the average understanding of God. That sums it up. That's how people thought. And there's still many people who think of Kodesh Baruch Hu like that. Except now they think he does it digitally or something. but that's the picture of a Kodesh Baruch Hu. The self sof katz ben ha'odam b'miragel ha'tamidi. Rav Hillel was a revolutionary. You're going to be hearing more about him, Mitzvah Hashem. His tireism, his greatness has yet to be sufficiently explored, the Bill Zeitlin. But he says, sof, at the end of the day, katz ben adam b'maragel ha'tamidi, a person can't stand, a person gets sick of the spy, of somebody who's watching him all the time. That's all HaKadosh Baruch Hu is, the guy that's spying on me all the time. I try to go into places where no one sees me. He's always looking in on me. How popular is such a Rebbeinu Shlom? How do you feel comfortable with the Rebbeinu Shlom? That's the whole Rebbeinu Shlom. The one who's always looking in on me, writing down and knows everything I'm doing. That's the whole Inyan of Elokus. And that mamish summarizes how average people lived with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Mitzayim heim b'nei Adam, and Rav Kook writes, Mitzayim heim b'nei Adam is Eloka kekoach takif. Rav Kook writes, kekoach takif is people envision Elokus as some great power, she'ein lihim olig mimenu, that you can't run away from. You can't escape from. Ve'hekrochu l'shtabed ilav. And you have no choice other than being meshubed, being enslaved to him. V'kashen nish'olim heim ayehu elokim. And if you would ask a Jew, a typical Jew, where is your God? Take it from me. Remember him and say, Nehem HaShemayim. Eliphaz Alpha adults, like a Christian, a Jew would be asked the question, where's God? He puts his hand on his heart, and he looks up to Shemayim in a very, very serious, somber way. He looks up to Shemayim. Vezbom Mufnes Klape Maila, and he points to Shemayim, and he says, Shom. That's where God is. Shom. Einem heim Shom Lamalu b'Shemayim. Nimstuhu Helukim. That's where God is. Danyonim heim Oisai Kimin Sabachaychon. In the best circumstances, they would think of God, people thought of God as a smiling grandfather, as a cheerful Zaydi, as a better type of a grandfather. Or Shama Kapten, sometimes you have a bitter, angry grandfather, that was a worse situation. Panavaturas Zokan Lovan Va'aruch, with a long white beard, Pinkas Godel Munach Lefanov, with a big book in front of him, Uboroshin is called Maisim in Adam, Chaisev Chaisev, Ramayda Kolonish, Vesaifa Kolonish Kachas. And all of Yiddishkeit and one's entire picture of Akash Baruch Hu was Nisana Taikif. That was it. Mi Yiche, Mi Yomus, Mi Veish, Mi Vamai, Mi Vamil. That's the whole of Baruch Shalom. But without the Ein Kitzvah, without the just the depressing part, not the Ein Kitzvah. Certainly without the Moses's Nigan, that's for sure not. Mila Chesed, Mila Shevet. Who's gonna have a good year? Who's gonna have a bad year? And so on. That was it. That was the whole Yiddishkeit. And that's how people saw things. Right, this, of course, could not continue. Take a look. Just we'll do a little bit more with the notes, then we'll go weiter. Footnote 1852. So Rav Kook is explaining, Rav Ariner is filling in, that now that we've come to the point in time of Smichas Keren Yeshua, M'chazda Hashem, Smichas Keren Yeshua, that the Yeshua is growing, it's Tu B'Shvat, and the Smichas Keren Yeshua before our eyes. It's beginning to blossom, it's beginning to bear fruit, and we're beginning to see the opening of the Yeshua. So Rav Kook explains that we can't continue on with that immature, small way of Amuna, and all the Bilbulim, all of the misunderstandings, all the confusion has to end, since we have to now be Isaac in establishing ourselves in our land, Be'emes, as a people. And in order to do that, we have to connect the highest madrigas of Keser to the lowest madrigas of simple workers, of Jewish workers that are tending to the land, that are working the land in Eretz Yisrael. And we have to make that connection to be able to establish a place of Am Yisrael in Eretz Yisrael. So if you look at 1852, is Kishem Sha'or Cotton. So why isn't it enough now that we should just go with a small light that used to be of God as a Santa Claus? Why can't we go on with that? Why does that have to change? Why do we need something much bigger? What happened? Why we're better than our grandparents? Why do we need such a thing? Why do we need such advanced Elokus? Why are we sitting down and learning Rav Kook and our grandparents just sat Tehillim and Mishnayos? Why? He says, Kishayim she'or katan meyye betzur halusha v'kalush es acheder. When there's a little light, a weak light, it's only able to provide a small dim light for a room. If you bring a weak light into a large room, it'll be very, very dim, be very hard to see. And certainly such a light, like by the halachas of Bedikas Chometz, it's not going to get to the chermah, to the stakim. It's not going to get to the cracks and to the corners. It's not going to reach there. You're not going to be able to see. In order to illuminate every corner of life, because that's what we need to do. Again, coming back to the farmer, coming back to the guy that's a construction worker. One of the problems is that since we have not advanced the way that we need to, so we've come to believe that it's dishonorable for Jews to be farmers and construction workers. And because of that, we've had to bring our own enemies onto the work sites. We have to bring Yishmaelim to tend to the corners of Eretz Yisrael. Those dark corners of Eretz Yisrael that a Jew doesn't want to do that. It's not for a Yid to be Isaac in these things. That's not honorable for a Jew. The only reason that he thinks that it's not honorable is because the light of Kesser is not shining all the way down into Malchus, into that place of Malchus in the Olam HaAsiyah, all the way down to every corner of life. So therefore we've left corners of our lives over to the Arabs, because we don't feel that that's a place where we can go. If the light of Eretz Yisrael be shining sufficiently, if Rav Kook's light, if the light of Emunah, if the understanding of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the understanding of what it means to be a farmer, or Rav Kook crying and his hands trembling when he was planting in Eretz Yisrael, if we would understand the significance of building a house in Eretz Yisrael, of laying bricks in Eretz Yisrael, of putting in the electricity into a house of Eretz Yisrael, so we wouldn't leave it to the Arabs, who sabotaged along the way many, many, many homes. Is Davyadua, the way that that's the way of Nakama, without blowing themselves up, that they would in the construction of those. They know there. People told this to us when we lived in Eretz Yisrael. When we moved to Eretz Yisrael, this already goes back a long time ago. And my father was building a home in Eretz Yisrael, so he was told that if you want to make sure that things don't fall apart in 10 years, you have to hire a guy that's there all the time and stays there and even was sleeping there. My father hired a guy, a Jew, that was watching the Arabs work whenever and that they shouldn't come in at night, and they were doing things with the plumbing. They would do things with the plumbing, the electricity that they know how to do, that everything would look like it works when you move in, but there's a way that that in a year and two and three and four things start to fall apart. So how did this happen that we have Yishmaelim building our land? The Yishmaelim are building our homes because it's not a b'kavod kimelacha for a Jew. I wouldn't like to do that. I don't like to do that stuff. I don't know how to do it, and I don't like to do it. And if we had to take Oivim and Zorim and so on, Mashchisim and Machrivim and Mechablim to build our country. To build our country, because the light of the Rabbeinu Shlom and the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael is not clear to us, and it's not shining in every single corner of Eretz Yisrael. We don't feel that. We don't see it. We still see Kadosh Baruch Hu as like something far and distant, with the long gray beard. And the only thing that the Rabbeinu Shlom, the only way we can get our name into the book and we get points and we get checks is by davening and by tefillin and by learning and by sitting in the sukkah and by blowing the shofar. That's how we get into the book. But we don't see ourselves in those corners of Eretz Yisrael. And therefore to establish ourselves as a healthy nation in Eretz Yisrael, Rav Kook says we can't go on with a dim light. We need that powerful beam of light that shows HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence in every flower, in every rimon, in every zayis, in every piece of chita, in every single plant and tree of Eretz Yisrael, to see the Or Hashem shining, to see the light of Hashem shining. But if your way of Emunah is only the old simplistic, so then the ikir is to stay in shul and to say kaddish, and that's it. So he says, "Akidei lahayus kol apinus akatanus va'filus yitzarf baragadol," to illuminate all of the corners, all the dark alleyways and corners of life, you need a very high voltage, strong light. Kachbagolus, so when we were in Golus, Kashahum alei oskar binyonim maisim, so we weren't really involved in practical things. Again, of course, people went to work, and they were working hard, and they were Isaac in all kinds of dirty jobs, but it wasn't in itself. As the delays drivers, I have to, tend to the pirates' his cows and his farm. It's the pirates. B'tlais Breira, I have to deliver milk, and I have to take care of this and do that. But it wasn't our land, it wasn't our place. Therefore, Kasha Umalei Oska B'nyanim Aisyim, it was somebody else's inyan. It was just trying to get by. Ach V'rak B'nyanim Ruchniyim. Therefore, our Yiddishkeit, we had a very clear separation. There was the Jewish part of my life, and there was the Goyish part of my life. The Jewish part of my life was when I was in shul, and when I was home. And the Goyish part of my life when I was out in the world, when I was out doing what I had to do to make a living so that I should be able to survive. I wasn't building my land. I wasn't investing in my malchus. I wasn't investing in my economy. Everything wasn't ours. It wasn't mine. It was just stuff that had to get done. But there was such a division between Gashmis and Ruchnis. There's Gashmis and there's Ruchnis. And the two of them, it wasn't Kimei HaShemayim Al HaAretz. The Bracha of Eretz Yisrael is Kimei HaShemayim Al HaAretz. That's the Bracha of Eretz Yisrael. Kimei HaShemayim Al HaAretz. Lamtar HaShemayim Tishtemayim. Kimei HaShemayim Al HaAretz. Laman Yibu Yimeichim Yimei Vinechim Al HaAdom is Kimei HaShemayim Al HaAretz. Is that fusion of heaven and earth. There's heaven and there's earth. Where's heaven? Heaven's in shul. Where's earth? By the parts. There's Gashmis and there's Ruchnis. Ruchnis is there and Gashmis is there. So the Gedolim, the great people, they lived completely in Ruchnis. Completely in Ruchnis. They didn't peek outside of that world of Ruchnius, and they lived in Kiddush and Tahara, unbelievable Kiddush and Tahara. With the fasting and the rolling in the snow and everything. Unbelievable Kiddush and Tahara. Those who lived in Shemayim. Then there were others who lived, who lived Al Haaretz, who lived on earth. Who lived on earth. And they paid their dues. And they tried to take off and to go back a little bit into Shemayim, but then they leave Shemayim, they go back to Eretz. So they were commuting from Shemayim to Eretz, Eretz to Shemayim. That's how Jews live. That's how they live. They were commuting. Like, you have people now that they can't settle completely in Eretz Yisrael, and because of modern transportation, they stay 2 weeks in Eretz Yisrael, and then Lahabul, they go 2 weeks to Chutz Eretz. Again, the delay is brighter. It's back and forth, Ratz Avashai. And that's how they live. That's not the tachlis. The tachlis is kimei hashamayim al haaretz. That means that every single second of your life is b'chol drechecha de'eyu. Is kimei hashamayim al haaretz. Is shining with the light of the Borei Olam every second of your day, every second of your life. Every second is a lokus. This is not how we live in Golis. In Golis, during the work week, Jews were dragging around with the lowest, lowest goyim. I'm not talking about how nowadays you go into the office and they have different values and there are things that they do in their personal lives. But for the most part, you're talking about educated, more refined chevra. And if you're thinking that's not true, that there's lows, it used to be told because we were never in Russia in those days in Poland to understand what's bemis of poyer, a real guy. We don't understand that. We're not such a musig of what that is. And that's what they were living. That's what they were living. That's how Jews lived. Therefore, Ruchnius was just Ruchnius. And that's where we lived. We had our fortresses of Yiddishkeit, of Kedusha, and then we were there Shabbos, and then you went back into the world of Gashmius. Then they tried to eke out a little bit of a living to make a couple of dollars, rubles to make a living. Dai hayalav emunah ktana. In that way of life, it was enough to have simple, little. You shouldn't call it simple emunah, because emunah truth is a very hard thing. Emunah ktana, low level, immature emunah. Akashahu mashav la'aretz. However, when when we began to return to our land. We have to get involved in the parish's property. We have to build our land in a very, very healthy, honest, strong way, to build an economy, to build an army, to build a world for ourselves. L'shem kach, he chayeves lios balas emuna gedola ma'amika. And in order for that to happen, we have to be in a place of emuna gedola ma'amika, great emuna, deep emuna. B'chol drechecha de'ayu, kimei ha'shamayim al'aris, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is everywhere, in everything. There's nothing at all that's demeaning or dishonorable about a Jew working the land, working on building a house. Others, the greatest covet is dir b'tachtonim mamish. Dir b'tachtonim mamish, it's a gili velokus, it's the tachlis of l'ukma shchinta ma'afar, to lift up the shchina mamish, to uncover the shchina in the dirt of Eretz Yisrael. Of Malay Khalharit's Kavodai. It's the biggest covet. The biggest covet. Look at not 1853. Shav Kook said that Eef Shalom Shiv Desagid Hasik Soid Gvarasa. A Soid Gvarasa, to understand the secret, the mystery of our strength, of our power, of our greatness. We can't understand that if we're stuck in that immature understanding of Elikus, of who we are, of what it means to be a Jew. So he writes, Rav Avinir writes in 1853, Ha'adam ha'prati yochalios cholish v'rafa. An individual person can be weak. An individual person, he can be a weak person. Imak, my son. And if they beat him up, ha'yochala havlik v'lishtog. So what's he going to do? He's not going to hit back. He's weak. So he can be quiet. He can be silent. Bebchines, as it says in Pasuk, Gevi nasat elamakim, my body you have given over to those who beat me up. L'chai l'mortim ponayim, and tear out the hair of my head. L'istarti meklimais varoka, I haven't been hidden, and I haven't been hidden from humiliation, from being spat upon. And an individual person can live like that. It's terrible. But he can manage. He can live like that, with that humiliation, and keeps his mouth closed to those who are beating him in order to survive. Not only that, but the suffering cleanses a person from his avarice. It's a kapara. So, for the last couple thousand years, whatever we've gone through, all of our parents, grandparents, great-grandparents, they had the same theme song, Zozana Kapara. I think those might have been my first words. Could be. I don't know. I have to ask my parents, but it would have made a lot of sense. It made a lot of sense because that's everything I always heard. This is an kapar. Kapar. Shvi kapar. No, I remember everything was like that. Even when I said some cracked to my father about President Obama, it was an kapar. This should be a kapar. Everything's a kapar. It's a kapar. It's a kapar. Kapar. I said, yes, how much kaparis do we do? Like, what did we do that was so bad to be Zaycha Kabam? What's that kaparis? Like, what would we be Zaycha for such a thing? but we were trained over the course of the past thousands of years, we were trained to just keep our mouths closed and to put your head down and to get beaten. And to get beaten. Aval Uma, however, when it comes to a nation, to be a nation, to be a people, Am Yisrael, not talking about individual Jews, but a nation, Aval Uma Eini Yechayli Lios Chalosha, a nation cannot be weak. Look what's going on right now. This whole tumult this past couple of weeks about the invitation of Netanyahu to come to speak in the Congress, and you have the Tzipi Livnis of the world. Who can't be soluble such a thing. So, yeah, of course it has to do with her own cover, you understand. Because she saw herself as the one that would be invited. And she doesn't understand how Netanyahu is still over there getting the invitation. But that's not the Iker. The Iker is that all of the left in Eretz Yisrael, all of the former communists in Eretz Yisrael, they can't be masig an Am Yisrael that doesn't bow down to Washington. They can't be masig such a thing. They can't be masig that the Prime Minister of Israel disagrees with the President of the United States. They're the biggest Golus Jews. Those Freie, those non-religious, those anti-religious Jews in the Israeli government, the leftists, they're the biggest Golus. They think of themselves as Sabras. They are the biggest Golus Jews. They're the Polishes. They're not Eretz-Yisraelikers. They're the Polishes. At least Netanyahu has still a little bit of covet of a Jew, because his father, his grandfather, Erlich Yidden, he has a little bit of a something that he's still able to stand up and to laugh at America on some level. He's still able to have that covet of Am Yisrael, a little bit to feel the covet of Am Yisrael, to feel the covet of the Jewish people. Not everything, you're making the president angry, you're making America angry, you're making America angry. Not to say that we don't have to have practical considerations, it's easy to talk about this, you're not Isaac in the government and anything like that, but it's mamash the opposite. The Derech Eretz that Americans have, the typical American, I'm not talking about Obama, the Derech Eretz that the American people have for the Jews in Eretz Yisrael is when Eretz Yisrael stands up to the Arabs. It's when Eretz Yisrael stands up to Iran. That's what the average American is about. Not these elitists who are sitting in the White House, but the average American. The average American wants to drop a nuclear bomb on Saudi Arabia, not to go make a sugar call, you understand? The average American wants to drop a nuclear bomb on Saudi Arabia. That's the average American. My wife and I, in the summer, we went one afternoon to visit one of the children, and we went, there was a park, and we were going into the park, and there were a few people that were standing around. And across the street there's a building, I don't know, a post office or something, one of these little towns upstate, and they were protesting. There were like five people protesting against Americans in Iraq, that the army is taking over Iraq, and you know, protesting. And we were standing there with a bunch of going into the park, and they're all turning to each other and saying, nukem, that's no thing. Like, you know, he's white, you know, push it to Poyas over there, in these places. They're just saying, drop a bomb on Iraq. Finish off the whole parasha, get rid of this whole union already. That's the average American. The average American. Just get rid of this whole taraz, this whole nega. Get rid of this whole nega that's making the world miserable. But the leftists are very, very worried. They don't want to insult Obama. Don't make him, because Obama is very close to Iran. You understand the words that he uses for Iran? He speaks about Iran like America is best friends with Iran. America has to worry about and take care of Iran. They get plenty of invitations. And I read in the newspaper last week that Al Sharpton has been invited to the White House 77 times. I never got one invitation. Did you get an invitation? I never get an invitation. Not one. Al Sharpton 77 times. A mushkas, a retzeach, a ganif, 77 times. He got invited to the White House. I got one invitation, not for Hanukkah, not for Kashmir, nothing. I never got an invitation. And Al Sharpton goes 77 times, he goes to the White House. We forgot what it means to be Am Yisrael. The people who are trying to, the government, either those who are in the parties who are scrambling around to try to get a couple of shkolim for their maizdis, or the left wingers on the other side, the left wingers who are karei mishtachta to America, who are worried about America's going to get upset. What's going to happen with America? We depend on America. They're not Golus Jews. The Tzipi Livnis, they're the biggest Golus Jews. All they believe in is shtadlonis and schnorring from America. That's all they believe in. If we would have a hergish, a little bit of Menachem Begindik, a little bit of a hergish of what it means to be proud to be a Jew, to be a part of Am Yisrael, there wouldn't be any more nuclear reactor, there wouldn't be in Iran, there wouldn't be anything. But this is what it is. Uma en yachol yos chalosha. A nation can't be weak. That you can't afford that. As individuals? Nope. should be a kapara. But what, they should say that in Eretz Yisrael? Everybody should lie back and let the Iranians finish off the bomb, and then every Jew in Eretz Yisrael, they're going to put a big sign, and they're going to say, Zana Kapara? drop an atom bomb on us, on Tel Aviv? It's a kapara, it's a kapara. That's how we're supposed to live as a people? Uma chayevis lios azur begvura. A nation has to be powerful. A people has to be strong. In Makimaisa, and if someone gives you a patch, as an individual you have the choice. When you get a patch, you might think it's kedai. Keep your mouth closed. At work, your boss insults you, you have to make a cheshbon. Talk back, not to talk back, I'm quitting. You have to make a cheshbon. That's your own cheshbon when you're an individual. In Makimaisa, but when it comes to a nation, in Makimaisa, he chayevis laharshiv mona achas apayim. If you get a patch, you get two patches back. As a nation, as a people. But you have to know who you are. You have to believe in yourself. You have to have an understanding. What's a Jew? What does it mean to be Am Yisrael? What is Am Yisrael? Ayin l'Pesachas. Kishe Rav Kook writes earlier in the Arius. Kishe Knesset Yisrael Misayreres Tchiyah. That when the Jewish people awaken for the Tchiyah, for the revival to come back to life. Moitzahi bekirba pnima, she finds within herself as uza uchvoda. Her courage, her strength, and her covet. Her covet, our covet, our self-respect as a nation, as a people, as Am Yisrael. Our strength as a people. The chol ha-Torah v'ha-Kodesh, ha-rogel himotzi b'achno. And all that is holy, all that is pure, and all that is holy. That usually what we associate with holiness, with kedusha and tahara, we associate meekness, right? With kedusha and tahara, when you think of a kaddish and a tahar, you think of a kaddish and a tahar, you think of a Jew who's meek, right? Who's very, very meek. Kedusha and tahara we associate automatically with a certain quality of being timid, of being meek, of taking a patch. That's what we think of Kedusha and Tahara. And we've heard millions of stories of tzaddikim who live like that in Golis. And we associate with that. He says, V'chol ha-toyev, but when there is that the spark of the strength of the soulful strength of the nation comes to life, shalofaz ha-gvura shel ha-umah, where the strength of the nation is revived, is brought back to life, the strength of the Jewish people as a people. Then there's a fusion, a joining together of what? Of the Kedusha and the Tahara, of the holiness and the purity, with what? With that Gvura, that Oiz and that Gvura, with the Kedusha and Tahara together. That's Kimei HaShemayim al Haaretz. Kimei HaShemayim al Haaretz. You remember the Meir Kahana, all the Shalom, used to say, every Jew of 42? Remember that? We used to march, we used to go, every Jew of 42. And all the Golish were saying, oy, what are you talking about? Don't say such a thing. The Goyim were getting all upset. You know when Jews were being slaughtered, they were shechting in the Holocaust, the Yeshuv here in America was worried about upsetting the White House also. You know that. You never heard of Rabbi Stephen Weiss? Who the Rosh, he was the Rosh Kalamadabim of the Jewish people, a reform rabbi, a koifer. He was the Rosh Kalamadabim over here. The main thing was, don't get President Rose, don't get him upset. The Goyim are going to turn against us. We have to be friends with all the Goyim. All of that is the way that we live. The way that we live for thousands of years. The shiluv means the shiluv, the joining together of shamayim and aretz, the shiluv of heaven and earth, the shiluv of ruchnius and gashmius, of the delicate, gentle world, the kedusha and the tahara of the tzaddik, to be together with the strength, the courage, the power of a soldier. Val tetame v'toymer, Vehechnia Kedusha. So don't ask, what about whatever happened to Kedusha? Where's the Kedusha? Where's the Kedusha in every Jew of 42? Where's the Kedusha in a Jew carrying a gun? Where's the Kedusha in a Jew fighting back? That's the Kedusha. When the Jewish nation fights back and gives a patch to the ones who are coming after her. He mitzias of Kedusha. That's mitzias of Kedusha. You could say L'shem Yichud Kutcher Baruch Hu Shechita before you drop the bomb on them. You can make a big L'shem Yichud before you shoot the Yishmaeli. You can make L'shem Yichud, I mean, don't take too long. You could say L'shem Yichud Kutcher Baruch Hu Shechita. It's a covered atzmi of Am Yisrael, of a people. That's because we saw that as being something which is horrible, something which is disgusting. I told you this. I told you this a few years ago. That after the Muhammad, my father had an opportunity to kill a Nazi. And there was an American soldier, gave my father a gun in his hand. My father, that's all he said he was dreaming of for years. That's all he was dreaming of, to be able to do that. And the B'shas Meister, the American, gave him and said, go ahead. My father couldn't do it.
It happened to my father too. He met one of the murderers of his parents. My father, I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, you know, I interrupted him.
He was 46, he was in the Red Army, he had a gun, and he sees the guy. And asked, did you kill him? I beat him up, I couldn't
kill him. Couldn't kill him.
It's incredible.
Yeah, my father said to the I can't. And the American, the guy didn't understand. He came out like, this is like, enjoy yourself. This is. What, you know, there was nowhere on the side there, it was whatever, there was this hospital thing, and my father had an opportunity to kill the guy. And the Americans machabed him to have the hanor. And my father said that he stood there, and he said he couldn't do it. He said it would be in the middle of a mochama or something, but the guy's crying, this Nazi was standing there crying. And my father was holding the gun, and he said he couldn't do it. And he said, and afterwards, my father told me he threw up. He doesn't know if he threw up because he almost killed the person, or because he didn't kill the person. He just got sick from the thing. He got so sick from the whole thing. And it was not there. Like, you see what Leon said. There are many, many Jews in that massive. It was a hefkeres afterwards. There was a lot of hefkeres. And I heard other stories of this, that like our story. The other story is that the Jews had an opportunity to do something, and they couldn't. So there's an edelkeit of a Jew. There's a tamimus. There's an edelkeit of a Jew. There's a refinement of a Jew that's all that, and there was this feeling that if I do that and I shoot a guy like that point blank, I shoot the guy, that somehow it's not a dove of kaddish. It's not something which is it's not a holy thing. I'm in some way I'm desecrating the kedusha of who I am by killing a person. And can understand that. That was something that was they were bred. That's how they were raised in such a way. And we are too. And it's hard for us to understand such a thing. But everyone wants.